Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to On the Ball with Rick Bucher. Here's your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on X, the former Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA, and that is here. All right, real quick synopsis on a big game that we just saw, the Dallas Mavericks beating the Denver Nuggets, and I don't know who it was, one of my media brethren put out there. Maybe it was Stephen A. Somebody who has a fairly big platform and somebody who should know better said, this is why you should believe in the Dallas Mavericks. This is why they could make noise come playoff time. Look, I like the moves that Dallas made at the trade deadline. I think they got better. And I'm intrigued by the combination of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. It's working out better than I thought it would when they first got together last spring, when it did not work a lot less well than I expected. So, all that said, if it takes the Denver Nuggets, as we've seen them do many times, just kind of hang around and try to get that professional win where they close in the last couple of minutes and pull out a win, and it requires Jamal Murray missing a open 16-footer and Kyrie Irving hitting a left-handed hook from the free throw line over Nikola Jokic. If that's what it takes the Dallas Mavericks to beat the Denver Nuggets on their home floor, good luck with that going somewhere. And as we know, it's all about matchups. And Dallas has a few that favor them when it comes to playing the Nuggets, but not enough. And so the overreaction to a two-point win, an unlikely two-point win, is one of the things that just drives me a little crazy. But that's not what this podcast is about. I just needed to get that off my chest. This episode is about the biggest tease that I can recall since I've been following the NBA, which is, as you know, a fairly long time. And that's the Los Angeles Clippers. They might just be the most seductive team that ultimately does not deliver that I have ever seen. And as I told you at the beginning of the year, I'm off the ship. I got off the ship, but I'm still mesmerized and amazed by how they can suck people back in. They're a little Dallas Cowboys-ish when it comes to that. The ability to make people think maybe this is the year. Maybe they turn it. And for this time around, it's Kawhi Leonard's been healthy. Paul George, for the most part, has been healthy. They add James Harden. That looks like it's a plus. And as of right now, they're still top four in the Western Conference. They've had some runs where they've looked just dominating against some really good teams. And then we get a week like this, where they go into New Orleans, big pivotal game, and they can't close the deal. And then they play the Atlanta Hawks at home after that loss. And they get run They get run off of their floor. How, as I'm watching it and I'm seeing the talent disparity, and I cannot explain how the Atlanta Hawks or how the Los Angeles Clippers would allow themselves to be beaten by this Atlanta Hawks team. Obviously, it was just energy and effort for the most part. Built a lead that Clippers had no chance of coming back on. And maybe they looked at it the same way I did. Like, these Hawks do not have enough talent to compete with us. But at some point, you have to learn the lesson, right? The definition of insanity, as I'm sure many of you have heard, and maybe even know firsthand. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And actually, I've heard a twist on that. Just recently, I heard someone say, no, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, knowing that it's going to fail, which I'm beginning to think might apply. That second definition might just apply to the Los Angeles Clippers. It certainly would appear to apply to Clippers star Paul George, and it might just apply to head coach Tyronn Lue too. Now, as I said, since the start of the year, I've sold all my stock in the Clippers. I spent the last few years going all the way back to the pandemic slash bubble season, believing that they were going to turn that corner, that they were too talented not to eventually break through. I was not buying the Clippers curse. I thought they would get, eventually, some point, they would get sick and tired of seeing a season perish by what I consider self-inflicted wounds. And maybe I was a little crazy as well. Except, it wasn't that I thought they could win it all playing the way they were playing or the way they were built. I just thought they would surely realize at some point that they couldn't win it all playing the way they were playing and the way they are built, and they would make the necessary adjustments. But at some point, we all have to accept that not everyone learns from their mistakes. Not everyone has the motivation or self-awareness necessary to pursue a change. And Paul George and the Clippers are a perfect example. Now, I'm going to go back to about four games ago, because this episode was originally inspired not by the loss to the Pelicans, not by the loss to the Hawks, but by a 118-100 loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Because this is the same Timberwolves team that openly laughed at and mocked the Clippers after beating them on their home floor exactly 1 month ago, 121-100. Now, the Clips, as they are wont on occasion, did exact a bit of revenge 2 weeks later. They beat the T-Wolves on their home floor in a Sunday matinee game. It was not a barn burner of a game. They won 89-88. It wasn't a dominating performance. And it was a game essentially won by the bench crew of Daniel Theis, Amir Coffey, and Norm Powell, who dug them out of a 16-point first quarter hole that was created by the starters. James Harden, George, and Kawhi Leonard were the closers down the stretch, but it was by no means a dominating or even impressive performance in light of how the previous game went. In the game this week, it was the Timberwolves who put themselves in an early 22-point hole. But it was funny watching it because the Timberwolves never looked shook. They never looked worried. It was as if they knew the Clippers' history, as if they knew they were going to get a chance to climb out of it, and they certainly did. And they did it. It didn't take them long. They took their first lead of the game midway through the third quarter after being down by 22 early. And they chopped off a good deal of it in the second quarter, reducing LA's lead to 8 by halftime. And then they erased the rest of it, thanks largely to Paul George, who decided, apparently, that he was going to single-handedly win or lose the game. Time after time, he brought the ball up, he tried to go one on Minnesota to start the second half. And time after time, Minnesota corralled him deep into the clock, shot clock, or simply stripped him of the ball as he was trying to drive through a field of Timberwolves. And the only time he passed the ball was when he had no choice after being forced to pick up his dribble and didn't have a shot. And that was generally late in the clock, resulting in one Clipper or another heaving a desperation three to beat the shot clock, resulting in a 1-for-6 shooting by the team collectively from three-point range in the period. Minnesota, meanwhile, simply cut, moved the ball, got quality shot after quality shot, and ran the Clippers ragged. The Clippers recorded a total of 2 assists in that period. The Timberwolves had 7. The Timberwolves had 2 turnovers. The Clippers had 9 in the period. 5 by George. Now, it would be easier to dismiss this as just a bad quarter by a really good player. It happens to the best of them. But this happens over and over and over again to Paul George, and it happens the exact same way. And it costs the Clippers in the exact same way. Now, the reason Paul was trying to take over was because Kawhi Leonard came into the game. He was dealing with a stiff back, and just before halftime, he started suffering spasms and opted to shut it down. And then the cameras caught him walking down the tunnel in street clothes, and it was reported that he'd left the building, which is another issue. The Clippers have no leadership here. I'm sorry. You can't stick around. You're not getting treatment. Where are you going to get treatment better than in the training room, at the building? And maybe your back's too jacked up. Maybe his back's too jacked up to go sit on the bench. But just to leave, I'm gone, you guys handle this, is just such a bad look and a bad feel. And this is arguably your best player. Now, I've long known Kawhi Leonard has no interest in being the leader of a team. It's just not his thing. His feeling, and I've been told this by people who know him, his feeling is, I do me, you do you. Like, I'm not going to be ruffled by a situation. You should not be ruffled by the situation. The idea that he's supposed to guide or lead anybody is simply not in his way of thinking. And then you start looking around at the rest of the Clippers roster and you're thinking, okay, so who is going to pick up that mantle? And it kind of falls to Paul George as a result. And then Paul has games or does things that he does in the Clippers, or excuse me, in the Timberwolves game. And you can see why it's a fait accompli. They're not going anywhere. George decided to single-handedly make up for Kawhi's absence. And that approach, because of George's immense talent, might have a chance of working against the Charlotte Hornets or the Detroit Pistons or the Washington Wizards. But against the best defense in the entire league, that has no chance of happening. And I wonder if PG was even aware of the fact that the Timberwolves have the number one defense in the league. Because, to be honest, it doesn't seem to be the kind of thing he'd be aware of. Or if he was, that it would occur to him that trying to go 1-on-5 against the best defense in the league might not be the most productive strategy. The Clippers, not surprisingly, in spite of the 22-point lead early, lost handily, outscored 29-15 in that third quarter that I gave you all the details on, and 63-37 in the second half. That's right. Outscored by 26 points after leading by 8 at halftime. And George's second half line, when he decided to take over, 9 points, 5 turnovers, 1 assist, 1 rebound in 14 minutes. Lou only played him 3 minutes in the fourth quarter before clearing his bench because the game was already decided. There's no point. So, look, Kawhi is obviously a big part of this game and missing him, and George doesn't try to take over if Kawhi is available. And in my latest MVP rankings for Fox Sports, I have Kawhi Leonard ranked 5th. A reflection of just how well he has played this season. It's also a reflection of how available he has been. He has played in 59 out of a possible 65 games. That was going into the Atlanta game, I believe. he already has surpassed his totals for the previous three seasons. Think about that. And if he maintains this pace of participation, he will play 74 games, which would tie his career regular season high, accomplished back when he was 25 years old and in San Antonio. That's how striking and encouraging this season has been. But having Kawhi on the floor isn't necessarily the cure-all, it would seem, because how he has played has fluctuated pretty severely, and the Clippers' ability to win has fluctuated right with him. So if you're thinking, well, it's the issue is Kawhi's not always there. No, Kawhi's been available, and they've had a pretty good record as a result. But they've had the same letdowns also as a result. I can't remember, actually, looking at it, the last time I saw splits between wins and losses that were so extremely different for a great player. Usually, you look at them and there's a little bit of variance. They're pretty good in losses, and their efficiency shooting or their rebounding or assist versus turnovers is a couple ticks higher in wins. But the difference in Kawhi's game is way more than that. In wins, he averages 25 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.5 turnovers per game, while shooting 56% overall, 46% from 3, and 93% from the line for a whopping plus 22 when he's on the floor. But whoo boy, in losses, it is a whole different story. Now, keep in mind, we're talking about an all-star, and we're talking about, arguably, again, Clippers' best player. His scoring average drops by 4 points. That's not too far off. The assists drop by 1. The rebounds slide slightly. But the shooting percentage is stark. Practically a full 10% overall from the field. We're talking from 56 to like 46%. Nearly a full 10% from 3 as well. So now we're going from 46 to 36. We're going from outstanding to acceptable.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even the free throw shooting, that's the crazy thing. Even the free throw shooting falls off nearly 10%. And all of that combines for a plus 22 turning into a minus 7 in the losses. The Clippers in general feel like a team that has no internal compass. A team of individuals that only play their best when they suffer an embarrassing loss, or their reputations as great players is questioned, or somebody suggests that they should blow the team up. And once they've shown, because they'll respond, they often respond. They'll go on a streak, get everybody believing again. But once they've shown what they're capable of, they downshift again. And they try to get away with the minimum to snag another win. It's the only explanation I have for the holes that they dig themselves and then escape, or the massive leads they build and then squander. Now, massive swings in the score, teams going up by 15 or more points and then giving it all back, that's become fairly commonplace, thanks largely to the volume of three-pointers being taken and the lack of defense being played. But the Clippers roller coaster really feels different. It feels not just swings of the game, but swings in the interest of the Clippers in playing it. They can move the ball and defend hard, and then they abruptly go ISO and stop rotating to leave opponents wide open. There's no help defense. It just flips. And it feels less about the opponent and more about what the Clippers decide to do, which is truly damning in my mind. That's worse. It's far worse in my mind to beat yourselves than to come up against an opponent who just is better. So this last week has been a perfect example of what I'm talking about. After the loss to the Timberwolves at home, they flew to Chicago and dominated a Bulls team that has been playing extremely well of late. And then they flew to New Orleans and fell the next night to the Pelicans and Zion Williamson. No one had the ball in the fourth quarter more than George, who never left the floor. And yet, again, one assist, 8 points, needed 8 shots to get them. Not an impact. Going a lot of ISO. Zion, meanwhile, without taking a shot outside of 7 feet, scored 34 points, basically bullying his way to a win. And this is a New Orleans team the Clippers could very well meet in the first round of the playoffs, or even potentially give up their fourth-seeded spot and have to start or play the series in New Orleans. They've lost 3 of the last 4 now. A team you'd think that they'd want to send a message. Nah, there will be time for that later, seemed to be the attitude. It's the second game of a back-to-back on the road. The win in Chicago gave them a split. That's good enough. No need to extend or overexert ourselves now. And if you want an example of the opposite, look no further than the Warriors' win over the Lakers on Saturday in prime time. Now that could very well be a play-in matchup. And the Warriors hadn't beaten the Lakers in their building since the first game of the 2021-22 season. They needed to make a statement, and they did. Now, granted, Anthony Davis got poked in the eye, didn't play the second half, so that was a turn. But you play who you play. And there's no question that the Warriors came out gunning for a win, giving it everything they could. Now, the two teams play in L.A. again on April 8th, so it's not a be-all, end-all win, but this surely is a confidence booster for a team sitting 10th in the West that had lost 3 of its previous 4 games. And that confidence that they gained in doing that against the Lakers on their home floor, prime time, with LeBron James available, and look, they were leading at the half when Anthony Davis was playing. It wasn't as if Anthony Davis was dominating and his going out swung the game. Maybe it would have been a different outcome if he had stayed, but it wasn't like they were winning with him. So let's keep that in mind when we look at the quality of the win. But that confidence that they gained from winning that game and winning it the way that they did should now carry over for the next however many games, or at least maybe until they get to April 8th and have to face them again. Meanwhile, the Clippers lose to New Orleans. Did it leave a mark? Not enough for them to show up against Atlanta the next game. These momentum things, these confidence marks, they move in both directions. Clippers are moving in the wrong one right now, again. Before I go, I want to address a recent back and forth I had with some Pelicans fans about their team. One of them questioned how the Orlando Magic could be ranked ahead of the Pelicans in my weekly power rankings. And after a fairly careful review, I concluded that they were kind of right. I probably had not dinged the Magic enough for a recent downturn and had not credited the Pels for their steady rise. I'm not afraid to admit when I get something wrong, and I acknowledge that. But then the back and forth abruptly shifted to my comments about Zion failing to expand his game and sharing that I'd been told by someone in the organization that he hasn't shown a great deal of interest in expanding it. Larry Nance Jr., was the one who came out and said, without speaking to me directly, said, "I don't know where this stuff comes from. I work out with him. We work hard, et cetera, et cetera." And it's not about working hard. It's about working smart. It's about working on weaknesses. And in any case, one fan on Twitter, on X, had the audacity to call me a liar. And it kind of makes me laugh. Why would I lie about what someone would tell me? What do I gain from that? Now, is it possible that whoever was talking to me was lying? Yeah, that is possible. And trust me, I always consider that when I'm going out there with someone who's a source, who I'm not going to identify by name, right? Because then it's kind of on me to believe them, and my credibility is on the line. So why would I, unless I knew this person that told me and knew that it was on the up and up, why would I do something like that? I'm not, anybody who's followed my career knows that I don't say things just to spike interest. That's not, I've got some people in the business that have done very well doing that. It's not what I do. I just tell you the truth, whether you like it or not. And that's why I'm not afraid to go against the grain if it's what I believe. But besides that, what proof is there, based on what we've seen of Zion's game, that the person who told me that was not telling the truth? If he is working to expand his game, it's not working. Now, I usually have the discipline not to go down the social media rabbit hole, but a combination of procrastinating on a big project that I have going and one fan suggesting that Zion had now become a monster on defense and that his skill set was better all around than Blake Griffin was just, all that was more than I could resist. I'm sorry. We can't have stuff that stupid put out there and not challenged, at least when I'm procrastinating. I recognized at the start of the season that Zion is in better shape. He's clearly been working out. I'm not debating that. And I also noted in watching him play that he's been smarter about how he attacks the basket. Like he's not going 100 miles an hour all the time and trying to dunk everything. He's trying to play with a little more finesse, which is smart for a guy who has had difficulty staying healthy and is as big as he is and plays with such force. Opting for layups over trying to tear the rim down is a smart decision. And he has pretty nice touch around the rim. But that's about all the development I've seen. He still has no reliable jumper, no sort of floater mid-range game, no discernible back-to-the-basket post-game. He still only finishes with his left hand, even if he goes right. And his playmaking, for the most part, almost exclusively comes off of drive-and-kick opportunities. He'll try to break somebody down, and if he can't get a step, he's kicking it and then rolling back out and letting them go. Off the ball movement, any of that, other than just flashing to the rim for a dunk from the dunker spot, I don't see a lot of that. But then why would I? Because he doesn't have the mid-range game to like curl off a screen and hit a little floater or jumper. One look at where he shoots from is all you need to know. The average distance of his shots this season is 3.8 feet. Not makes, just shots, total shots. That's the lowest on the entire New Orleans Pelicans team. The entire team. It's lower than center Cody Zeller's. Someone suggested now that Zion was so good at finishing around the basket, he doesn't need to develop anything else, which is just flat out laughable when you think about how the game is played today and what Zion is supposed to be. So he's just going to be Moses Malone, except Moses Malone could rebound. He's just going to attack the rim. That's all he's going to do. And he's going to be what? Because as is, he's just attacking the rim. And he's not in the league's top 10 in field goal percentage. He's not in the top 20 in scoring. And you're telling me that as a point forward, because that's really what they're using him as, and it's where he creates, you know, an interesting dynamic, interesting matchups. I'm not mad at that idea. But you're telling me that as a point forward, playing essentially the role that Luka Doncic plays and LeBron plays, that he wouldn't benefit from having a pull-up jumper or a mid-range turnaround? And I'm not even Like, I'm not even asking for three-point range. Although Jonas Valanciunas was able to develop that, and he didn't come into the league with it. I remember once upon a time that Zion was projected as the next LeBron James. So what happened to that idea that now we're going to accept, yeah, he's really good at going to the rim and that's all he needs to do? As if that's all LeBron needed to do. LeBron wasn't a great jump shooter when he came into the league, but he was certainly capable of doing more than what Zion does, obviously. And he didn't stop there. He did develop a jumper. He did develop three-point range. I don't understand why we would accept less. He's a uniquely gifted player. There is no doubt about that. And I would think that Pelicans fans would want him to realize his full potential, not defend him for essentially being the same player he was when he arrived in the league 5 years ago. Now, if it's just a matter of, has Zion found a way to stay healthy and therefore able to make an impact for the Pelicans, then yes, he has taken a positive step this season. No ifs, ands, or buts. I'm looking at him through the lens of what he was projected to be coming into the league, not through the lens of what he's been the last few seasons. And I hope that clears up any confusion or misunderstanding about where I'm coming from and why I view him and what he's done this season as I do. All right, that does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And I do mean that. I love to hear how you rate the show, if you have any comments. As I said, I'm open to ideas. If there's something going on in the league that you'd like me to address, I can't promise you I'm going to do it, but I'm certainly open to considering it if somebody comes up with a good idea. I believe I've done that at least once since I made the offer. So it can happen. In the next podcast, not sure exactly where I'm going to go. We're getting close here. Maybe it's taking a look at why I believe the Denver Nuggets are still, without question, the team to beat, regardless of recent losses. Although, I feel like I've already addressed that at the top of this podcast, so I probably need to go someplace else. And I'll figure that out. Wish I could tell you exactly where we're going to go in the next podcast, but you'll find out when it drops, and when you see the title, you'll know. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.